It's Ebro in the Morning with Laura Stiles and Rosenberg.
It's Ebro's. Laura Rosenberg is on some sort of, vacation assignment? He's not here, Common. But our friend Common is back and introducing to us this young woman that y'all collaborating with, PJ. Nice to meet you. Good to see you. Bravo.
Hi,
bravo,
PJ.
Now, Common, you're a friend of the show. I consider you a friend here. I want to start with this new project that you have coming out. Talk to us about this new album.
Yeah, so the new album is Beautiful Revolution Part 2. So I put out Part 1 in last October. Part 2 is really, it's the evolution of Part 1 in the way that the music is revolutionary, but it's inspiring. It's I wanted to put music out that created hope and optimism. Because, you know, people have been dealing with a lot. We've been dealing with a lot. And I was like, man, music been that thing that's been giving me a lot of life and energy. And I was like, man, I want to create something that's powerful, something that's when somebody put it on, they can feel man, the world go be better. And I just created, that music. And PJ is our artist that's featured on it, so many songs. We collaborate together, we create together in the studio, along with Kareem Riggins and...
Kareem, what up? Yeah, Robert Glassford still? Y'all still cooking with Robert?
Rob Cook up. Our brother Isaiah Sharkey and Boone Bishop. Some of the brothers we got to perform with a lot. You know the collective. And it's just talented musicians creating music that we love and putting it out there for the people, man. I'm sparked by this project, man. It's a beautiful album, man.
PJ, sorry. I want to know. PJ, where are you from? And how did you guys connect? And what's the background?
I'm from North Carolina. I'm also on Atlantic, but we met through Jaha, when he was doing Black America.
Yeah.
And we did a song called Unfamiliar. And then it was quarantine, because I hadn't seen you in a while, and then you called me when you were working on Bookmarks.
Yeah. I called her up because it's a television show that's for kids, for Black and brown kids, really. And I called her up because they asked me to do a song for it. I was reading some of the children's stories, and they was like, yo, do a song. And I was like, man, I gotta get somebody that could really accomplish this. PJ came in the studio, and we was cooking, and it was from that moment, we was freestyle. We came up with a lot of songs, and I was like, man, I remember how dope PJ is. And from there, we just started continuing to create. And it's, man, for me, it's important that, man, I make music with people that sharing the vision, and they can elevate me too. I'm elevating them, we elevate each other. And also just want to put good energy out there. At this point in life, I'd be like, man, I want to be around people that just got good energy and want to do good in the world,
I feel like PJ might out-rap you too a little bit. I feel like she might get you.
In
a freestyle. I feel like that goes on.
She got, look, point blank, I ain't gonna lie.
You see him tighten up though? You see him tighten up? You trying to play me?
This is my sister right here. So she can rhyme, I think, because when I listen to her writing, I'm like, damn, it's certain singers that write, you can tell they rhyme, so... I'm listening to the words she used. I'm like, oh, yeah, she rhymed. But, let's face it, man, nobody go defeat me on the mic. Nobody.
Not rapping-wise.
Nobody rapping.
So why you ain't done the verses yet, man?
Man, I mean, it's just they got to say who I will go up against.
Who do you think you should be paired up against?
Probably either Black Thought or Most, but I can go up against anybody.
Common versus Black Thought or Common versus Most. What about Talib?
Talib, I mean, they're my brothers, but I would go up against
them. No, but that's what it's supposed to be.
But I mean, I'm willing to go up against anybody, man. I'm an MC. I had to tell you, I had to remind you. Remember, Ebro left me off his list of top 50 MCs ever, so I ain't gonna never let him forget
yo,
that.
You know who else got mad at me too?
Who?
Q-Tip.
Yeah, he should have, man. Come on, man. He should have, bro.
Now you're right. Listen, you're right.
Hey, Lord, I ain't gonna never let him forget that.
As you should.
Top 50. But anyway, speaking of that, man, I've been listening to Tribe and the Black Moon and just Gangstar. I've been this album for me was sparked by that music, the 90s. I was just 90s hip-hop and R&B, just remembering why I love music and what that music created for me. So, yeah, man, you got to...
So now let me ask you, on that MC thing, how proud as a... because now we live in a world where, people call themselves artists, who rap, but they don't want to call themselves rappers because I think that their rap skill, and this is me making an assumption where I look at them and I think that they don't think that their rap skill either measures up to the greats of the past, because it's very hard to be a Common, a Q-Tip, a Nas, a Hov. Like, that's a rare air and you know, and a place to be. But the reason I bring it up is because on Full Display the other week on Versus was when Jada was barring it up, and people got to see what this real MC shit really was. Did you watch it? How did it make you feel as an MC?
Man, I saw like some of the clips. I didn't get to see the whole thing because I was actually working, but then my homies was hitting me like, you watching this, Jada? And I went back and checked it out, and I was like, man, I just felt so good for hip hop. Man, like, I felt
so... You was about to start drinking 40s and smoking blunts.
Exactly.
Can I borrow a dollar? Let's go.
Look, I love that he had all his guys. They had their guys on stage. Some, that was just like the essence of hip-hop in many ways, just New York. And it was a celebration to me in New York and what MCs do. Like, he controlled the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Man, and he
master
was like...
Master
of ceremony. He was kicking rhymes and just performing and giving the people what they need and, like... Man, that's what MCs do. So I think obviously for all of us, it brought to light some of the stuff that we appreciate about real hip hop stuff.
Right.
You know, I feel like it's space for everything. Now it ain't like I'm one of them dudes that's like, man, you if you ain't MCing, you shouldn't be making music, because you know that if you're an artist and that's what you feel, you create. Yeah. But I love the MCs. That's what I gravitate to. That's what, you know, that's who inspired me. And that's, to me, those are the ones that stand out. That's why Jada stood out, because it was like, he can get on, like, it, for me, an MC could go any place. Like, I can go to, I've been in church rapping, like, the pastor be like, come kick a freestyle. So I go up there and rhyme. And then that's what an MC has to do.
Right.
Yeah. For you as a fan of hip-hop, which of the younger generation, like the young artists right now that are bubbling right now, who do you like, or who do you admire? Who do you see, like, skills?
I know this artist has been out for a while, but
they're young.
I tell you, they're younger than me. Kendrick Lamar is, to me, one of the dudes that, like, I always can say, man, like, when you start talking about the greatest MCs of all time, he goes in that category. I like No Name too. She's from Chicago.
Right. She's fire.
She can rhyme, man. Like, and yeah, man, I like Earl Sweatshirt. You know, I like the ones sometimes that when I hear them, I'm like, oh man, I gotta go write. Like No Name, when I hear her, I'll be like, damn, I gotta go write. She remind me of what De La Soul or somebody used to do for me. Like where she can go into her own world, and that's what, to me, like some of the dopest artists, like they take you, what Ghostface did, like for us is like, you ain't understand everything Ghostface was saying, but it was just his, you know, going into his thing. And I love that about No Name, and I love that just about artists where they find who they are and their voice. So them the ones I respect the most. Kendrick obviously is one of the greats.
So PJ, I'd love to hear from you. A legend like Common reaches out and says, I want to work. You know, you're a new artist, right? How long you been signed?
Chef G is home, baby. Sleepy Hollow, Connie Diamond, 310 Baby, Celebrity Host, Ice Spice and A Boogie. Big Daddy Kane will be celebrating the life of the finisher, Mr. C.
Mr. C, step to me.
Jadakiss, EPMD, Eric B and Rakim, Method Man and Redman, Lord Tariq and Peter Guns. Yours truly, the curator, the lit digital DJ, Funk Flex on the set. Hosted by Nessa, Ebro, Peter Rosenberg, and Laura Stiles. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Oh, you thought we wasn't going to get it right?
He's on fire!
I've been signed a little minute on Atlantic. I think I got signed in 2016.
So about 5 years.
Yeah.
But they signed you as an artist or a songwriter?
I was an artist first, but I'm signed to BMG and APG as a writer.
So you're getting that money?
Yeah.
Now, as a songwriter, because there's tons of people who want to be in that game, and I'm going to come back to, you know, working with Common, but while we're here, I'm sure there's somebody watching this who's like, I'm not quite sure, do I want to be an artist? You know, because some people want to be in front of the camera. Some people don't want to be on stage. They just want to go to the studio, write that hit record, give me my money,
yeah,
and go on about their life. It seems like you want to do both.
Yeah, I want to do both because I feel like when I get to make, because I get to make music like for me that speaks to me, and then I get to write because I write, like I've written for Sweetie and like Meek and Chris, and then it's like different, you know what I'm saying? But I feel like it's certain stories that, there's certain stories I feel like as a writer and even as an artist, I feel like only I can tell. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I can write about this and I can write about that, but when I'm telling my story, I feel like can't nobody tell my story better than me.
Right.
So
you know, it's crazy because I'm like, you know, being around songwriters, I really didn't get the concept all the way because I haven't, you know, as a hip-hop artist, you write your own rhymes, really. Right. And then I was like, man, songwriters are, it's like, I started, like, doing my research and saw how, like, writers was writing songs for, obviously, like, a lot of the Motown artists back in the day. And you know, I saw how, like, Ashford and Simpson wrote Ain't No Mountain High Enough and wrote I'm Every Woman. And then, you know, Gambling Huff was right.
Yeah.
And then, like, being around PJ, I'm like, oh, songwriters have to be able to get the voice of all these different people and channel that, like, in a pure way. And then the artists got to be able to make it sound like theirs. So, I mean, I'm learning, to be honest, when it comes to
that. Well, because that's like, you remember back in the day, they used to use the term recording artists.
Yeah.
Like, meaning your job is to record amazing things. Yeah. That's your talent.
Yeah.
Is you sound good, recorded.
Yeah.
Your job is to write the song.
Yeah.
But you don't sound that good recorded.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We don't want you recorded. We want your song.
Yeah.
Or the session.
Yeah, session musicians.
You come here and play.
Yeah.
And that's that.
That's that.
The composer. Somebody who actually wrote the music that you're going to play.
Yeah.
Like it used to be, like I didn't even process it. George Clinton.
Yeah.
From Newark, New Jersey. When he started, he's 80 years old. So when he was 20 years old, 60 years ago, he used to come into Manhattan, him and other black dudes from Newark who was playing in church and whatever. They would go, they got paid, go to Sony right here. And Sony had a whole floor of black people. Right. Their job was to write records.
Man.
That was the job. You come here every day and come up with songs. We pay you a flat fee. You don't get no publishing.
Right.
You don't own none of this.
Yeah.
We paying you a flat fee. We own this.
Man.
And going about your business.
Man. Well, that's one of the things that that whole ownership, man. I'm so glad. One of the things that just happened was seeing De La Soul get the rights to their masters was like, when Maceo called me when that happened, and he was like, man, I got great news for you. You know, he was talking about his son is rhyming, his son could really rhyme. And he was like, man, we got the rights to our masters. I was like, man, I was happy about that, but the fact that people owned our music is like a crazy concept when you think about the concept of the music industry.
Well, because it's, I always tell people, and I'm not too well-versed on, like, royalty versus publishing versus, you like, that whole business because there's multiple businesses there. But signing a record deal as a songwriter, artist, whatever you are, is really like a bad small business loan.
Yes, it is.
And the reason I say bad is because when you go out, let's say you're opening up a bakery, and you're like, yo, I'm going to the Small Business Association for a loan. They don't take 50% of your business.
No.
They, unless you don't pay your loan back, of course, and then they come or whatever. But out the gate, a record label's like, oh, you want to be in the business of music.
Yeah.
To do so, we're going to give you X budget, but we're also taking control of the shit you make.
Yeah. I think it's important, too, that we have these conversations because more and more we see, you know, young artists show how educated they are in the business of music. If this is the business you want to step into, you got to know what you're getting yourself into. And we've seen people make major mistakes also where they absolutely make $0. I think I read somewhere like Bismarck made $0 off of Just a Friend.
It was like a copyright issue with him because he a sample thing or something. I don't know what happened, but it was like
but
some
you read
kind
that
of
too.
Lawsuit. Yeah.
So it's like just educating yourself in the business.
Well,
of
then
it
those
all.
Samples, Common will tell you. I'm sure you know some samples.
Yeah,
they'll take.
Sure.
If you don't go through the and some of that old school shit, when they go back, they like, yo, we taking 100% of that.
Yo, let me tell you, I done got, man, they done came from me like 10 years later, 15 years later, and got the sample that we. But also, I mean, on the flip side of that, I gave up a lot of my publishing for the song The Light. You know, we sampled that for Bobby Caldwell, but man, the payoff on it, like, you know, I remember
performance and
like, I mean, I'm performing that song to this day. It's definitely one of the biggest songs I've ever done, and it's like what it ended up creating for me was a whole nother blessing. Right. You know, even though I gave up a lot of the publishing. So, I mean, some of it, like you said, Laura, it's just about being as educated as possible about it. I mean, I got in this business. I ain't know much. I was reading this book, All You Need to Know About the Music Business, and you know, we were just finding our way.
Who helped you? Who mentored you throughout like navigating through your career?
Well, you know, Derek, who was my manager.
Derek Dudley, what's going on?
Yeah, D-Dud, what up? Who was my manager and one of my best friends. We've known each other since fourth grade. So he was like really more business oriented. Gotcha. So he helped me a lot through the situations. And then we had people that like mentored us in certain ways, like just the people we met that were cool throughout the business. And, you know, I'm still continuing to learn and continuing to grow. And as you said, some of the young artists come in with that. Like what Chance came in thinking, the way he was thinking was, and is thinking, was powerful. Because
Chance is doing it. He just put that movie out, too.
Yeah, he put a film out.
Film out. He shot it in Chicago. Yeah. Put it together himself. Got it in AMC theaters.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? He doing it. Building his business.
Building the business, man. And PJ and I always talk, and I'm like, yo, P, it's like, man, you are the business. You the center, meaning like you control like making sure you have your agents the way you want, management the way you want, your publicity team the way you want. And you gotta, you know, coming up, I used to think of it like depending on the label was the mentality. Man, the label not doing this for me, or man, my management not. And it's like, no, you gotta just hire the right teams, get the right team, as we talked about, the right energy, and then you gotta direct them. And also, you know, it's your business. Your career is your business. So you have to like have the vision for it and have people to elevate that business and share in the vision and bring stuff to it.
Well, and also too, like you using the Bobby Caldwell kind of situation you just articulated.
Chef G is home, baby. Sleepy Hollow, Connie Diamond, 310 Baby, celebrity host Ice Spice and A Boogie. Big Daddy Kane will be celebrating the life of the finisher, Mr. C.
Mr. C, step swimming.
Jadakiss, EPMD, Eric B and Rakim, Method Man and Redman, Lord Tariq and Peter Guns. Yours truly, the curator, the lit digital DJ, Funk Flex on the set. Hosted by Nessa, Ebro, Peter Rosenberg, and Laura Stiles. 30th anniversary of Summer Jam. 30% off right now. This offer ends at midnight on Sunday. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Oh, you thought we wasn't going to get it right?
He's on fire. Fire,
fire, fire. Sometimes giving up something can get you more on the other side too, but it should be on your terms,
right?
Because a lot of people be like, yo, but I own 100%. And it's like, okay, but you're not making any money. So 100% is zero.
Yeah.
It's still zero, fam. Exactly. Like, you got to figure out how to position a song you wrote, a relationship you have, to, you know, figure out a partnership that makes sense.
Oh, that's wisdom right there, because so many times we were going through the journey like, man, but you could own the rights to this. I'm like, but is the rights to this really going to do anything? Like, you know, like, let's figure out the partnership that's going to get them. Because I always believed that, man, if you get your music out there and your quality out there at a high level, you know, you're going to create finance. You're going to get money. The money going to come. Like, to me, I'm a person that put my intention into creating the best quality music, the quality art, putting my soul into it. And going out there and being smart with the
but maintaining control of your brand, right?
Yeah,
being able
sure.
to say, this is what my brand is about, this is what I'm about, here's the stuff I will do, here's the stuff is a no-go.
Bro, I remember this was like early 2000, somewhere around there. I was offered to do this Coca-Cola commercial. And it's the first time Jimmy Iovine really had, I was on the label, it's the first time he really reached out to me directly, like I'm talking to Jimmy Iovine. It was a big deal for me, like, you know. And he was like, yo, we want you to do this Coca-Cola commercial. You know, I guess they was in partnership with them. And I was like, nah, man, I don't drink Coke. Nah, man. I'm on my vegan, you know, my earthy vegan. Like,
yeah,
bro,
I don't drink that.
I'm not doing that. He was like, come on, you know, like, this is what it is. And it was the biggest deal up to date for me at that point. My mother was like, bro, you got to do this. Like, this is your daughter's college money. Do this. I was like, no. And then, so Derek, everybody mad at me. So then, they came back and doubled the money, right? So I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to have creative control. I'm going to make sure James Poison and is producing, Chris Robinson directing. I'm not holding a Coke bottle. And I rapped about what authenticity is and how I would never sell out. And I ended up getting double the money and saying what I needed to say. Having principle. And to me, that was just like, okay, I got to control what I put out there no matter what.
Right.
Yeah.
So back to UPJ, when someone like Common calls and y'all didn't know each other, were you like, how does that feel for you? Did you know his music? Was you into who he was?
Yeah.
Or was you just like, oh,
she was like, this
that's
cat.
The bald light-skinned dude that was with Erica. He's fly. Was it like, what?
That's what she was really like.
What was so crazy is like right before I met you, I had just seen a Suicide Squad because I was trying to get a song in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So I had seen it before it came out, so I had told him about that. But yeah, it was super dope. It was dope.
Yo. That's what's funny, man, because...
But she didn't know the lyrics to I Used to Love Her.
No. I mean,
she ain't rocking the corner. Yo, play that corner real quick, the last poets real quick.
I knew The Light and I knew Testify. Testify.
Testify's fire.
But sometimes, like, even when he'll be performing, because we'll be in soundcheck, and you'll do a song, you'll be like, you know this? I'll be like, yeah, I know this song.
I'd be surprised sometimes.
Like, I'm like, what you mean?
I'd be surprised. But, I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is, obviously, it's generations and young folks, some that don't know the music. I've had cats come up to me just recently, because I did this show called Never Have I Ever. It's on Netflix. These little cats, these little white cats came up to me. They was only 12, about 12 or 13. Hey, are you the guy from Never Have I Ever? I was like, yeah. They was like, really? Is that you? I was like, yeah, that's me. And then after that, you know, I saw him the next day because it was on the basketball court. And he was like, man, we checked out your music. You got good music. And like it was an introduction.
Right.
And I mean, for me, I'm like, I know that everybody don't know my music. Everybody don't know. Man, I was walking down the street in Brooklyn the other day, and some dude was like, yo, is that Jim Jones?
No,
bro. Yes. Just yesterday that happened.
That don't even make any sense.
I've gotten called Mos Def, Questlove, different names that people would be like, yo, that's Mos Def.
I made Common shave his beard years ago because I had the beard first.
And I was like, come on, brother.
Let's not do this.
Come on, brother.
And so I called because I would be in the airport. People be like, yo, Common. I called him. I was like, yo, you got to go back to the goatee, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Now you got me. Now you got me, bro. You fresh with the beard. But, you know, they always be mistaking us, right?
Yeah, always. So how close are you to EGOT? Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony?
Yeah, I'm right there, man. I had an Oscar, the Emmy, and the Grammy. And Broadway is definitely something I really want to do, bro. Like, I've been wanting to do Broadway before I even got on a TV show or anything. Like, I love acting, man, so.
So are you working on that actively now?
Yeah, I actually had a dope play that I was set to do, and then everything happened everything getting canceled with the pandemic and moved around. So now I can't do it because I'm doing this Apple TV show. So I can't do that play, but I'm definitely gonna do a play. Like I did like a small run at this theater, Minetta Lane Theater, for Audible. And I did a play that I wrote. It was like a one man show, but with music. Man, it's called Bluebird Memories. It was like a tribute to my father, and it was dope, man. So anyway, I want to do some theater. Y'all gotta come see me on Broadway. I'm gonna light it up, bro. You gotta come.
I'll be on my best behavior. I won't heckle. If you up there like crying, doing a long monologue, I won't be like, yo, Rasheed!
What you doing?
What you doing?
Wait, so was there ever a role that you passed on or something you auditioned for that you didn't get that blew up?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been like, pretty much a lot of roles that Mahershala Ali gets now.
Mahershala Ali crushing you, right?
Crushing me, bro. Like, I mean, it would be times that I literally, my agent would be like, it's between you and one other person.
And you'd be like, Mahershala Ali, Mahershala, right?
Next thing I know, Mahershala Ali casted in Hunger Games. It was like, it was a Hunger Games movie that I definitely could have been in. And it's been a lot of other ones. And it was funny, when he won an Oscar, he was like, yo, man. I was like, man, you knocking me out of every role now. He was like, you know you knocked me out of Smoking Aces. He told me, like, the first movie that I ever did, I got the role instead of him. So it's like, you know, but that's my guy. You know he make beats, too.
He's a rapper.
Yeah, he can
rhyme.
He got some dope beats, too. Yeah, he from the Bay. I respect him a lot. But that's one actor that I always, like, any movie you see Mahershala in, I'll probably try.
You like Mahershala, right?
Y'all got like a little rivalry kind of with I didn't know he rapped too.
Yeah.
He used to back
then. He still does it. I saw him, you know, he sent me some beats and rhymes. He can rhyme. I feel like what he has is that hip hop thing that's kind of abstract, but it's dope.
But in a way, you want to battle him since he handling you on the acting thing right now. You want to be like, yo, chill, my chick.
I want to just light
this mind over here.
Yeah, stay over there. Nah, but it's all good. You know, I remember the actors used to be like, man, we don't want these artists, you know, acting and stuff like that. And I was like, man, I'm an actor too. I study the craft. Like, this is what I do. And I feel like if you about like point blank, like Dame Dolla, Dame can rhyme. Lilla can rhyme.
Dame Lilla
can
rhyme.
I mess with him on a rapping tip.
Yo, Dame, y'all got a collab now.
Yeah,
you know, Dame might just DM you after this and be like, yo, let's cook.
That's my guy. Yo, this dude, I'm with.
Chef G is home, baby. Sleepy Hollow, Connie Diamond, 310 Baby, celebrity host, Ice Spice and A Boogie. Big Daddy Kane will be celebrating the life of the finisher, Mr. C.
Mr. C, step swimming.
Jadakiss, EPMD, Eric B and Rakim, Method Man and Redman, Lord Tariq and Peter Guns. Yours truly, the curator, the lit digital DJ, Funk Flex on the set. Hosted by Nessa, Ebro, Peter Rosenberg, and Laura Stiles. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Oh, you thought we wasn't going to get it right?
He's on fire!
Rhyming with Dame, because he dope. I'm supposed to, I'm actually supposed to do something at his wedding. He getting married.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, so that's I respect him a lot.
But he going to be like, don't try to play for the NBA. Like, you know what I'm saying? Don't try to step in my zone.
I'll be trying to, bro.
I see you.
If Rosenberg was here, the last time I saw him, we was in Chicago for
All-Star.
The Celebrity All-Star. He was commentating. He was giving me a little love because I got MVP that one. So he had to give it up, you know? Ask PJ about my game.
Wait, you go hoop?
It's me,
You go hoop?
She can really
play
hoop.
All the time.
Yeah, we be playing.
You ever beat him yet?
We don't really be playing real games.
Oh, now that you come out.
Because when we play at the studio, it's just pig. But I've been trying to get him to, like, you know, play like a real game, like 5-on-5 or something like that. Because I don't think pig is an accurate assessment
of
somebody's skills. But yeah, so we haven't played like a real game.
She be playing at the gym. Like, she be going to LA
24.
Oh, like you just walk in, pick up, playing with dudes, whatever. Like, you hoop.
Yeah.
You played in college?
No, not in college.
Not in college.
But she really.
How tall are you?
5'11".
Oh, yeah, you hoop.
Tall enough.
Yeah, you hoop.
Tall enough.
You hooping. You scared to play her? Keep it
on. He's supposed to go get his squad, and I'm going to go get my squad.
Bro, I ain't scared.
That's why you don't want to do it. I bet you they not.
She trying to get them dudes, but I'm like, I don't care who she get. You got to understand, my game is real, bro. My game is like, I'm like that. Like,
all right, who better, you or Kanye?
I'm definitely better than Ye. Ask Ye. It was a time where
Ye can hoop, though.
Yeah, Ye can hoop. But let me tell you, we went to Hawaii.
My Dark Twisted Fantasy
days, right? Went to Hawaii. I show up. They break out all these Kobe's. This is when Kobe's had the first, God bless his soul, he got the low-cut joints. They all got on their Kobe's, him, Don C. And I forgot who else was with us. Nigga, look, the first game, I just killed whoever. I think it was Don first. Then I went
Common
to
start using the N-word. Yeah. He's a whole, he a whole different person. He started talking about basketball. Yo, what happened to the guy from Selma? What's going on?
Yo, I killed
Southside coming out.
I killed him, Don C. I forgot. It might have been Ricky, because Ricky could hoop, though. But basically, I'm saying, yay, no. Yay, no. Like, that. What's up?
So, let me ask you this. The story of Derek Dudley's kitchen, no ID. Am I saying it right? Yeah. Or basement?
Yeah, basement. Derek's basement.
It was you, no ID. That was like the early Chicago.
Yeah.
Hip hop, right?
Early Chicago. I mean, we had like Chicago was like its scene was starting to come together because we, you know, we was just.
What year is this, 90?
This is like 88, 89.
Okay.
Derek, no ID, we all, and myself, we all went to elementary school together, grammar school, since fourth grade. And Dion was DJing.
He was a house DJ.
House DJ.
Right.
We all break dancing, you know, we all going out doing, pulling our cardboard, doing our thing. Eventually, I started rhyming. So then No ID started producing, like, because Derek had the basement. Derek was able to get the SP-1200. So we go to his basement, cats is sampling. We brought our brother Twilight Tone with us.
Twilight Tone. He's the key.
He bringing this whole new energy of hip-hop. And we just was all the dudes that loved hip-hop. We loved house music, too, but we really gravitated to hip-hop. And we just started, man, making the music and making demo tapes and getting known a little bit around the crib. And, you know, our homies is always big up in us and stuff. And then eventually, man, it was like I went away to FAMU. Derek went to Howard. Dion, no ID, was, like, still cooking up. And, man, we got this call, like, from Relativity Records. They was doing a deal for Source when the Source had Unsigned Hype. Mm-hmm. They were doing an Unsigned Hype tape. So they on that tape was Biggie, was Mobb Deep, because we all were Unsigned Hype artists. All of us was on this tape. But the tape never came out. Mm. And Relativity was like, we want to sign you. And they ended up signing me, man. I waited around for about a year to get my music out, came out here and recorded my first album. I went to Calliope Studios because I saw De La Soul and Tribe recorded there. And man, it just was, you know, I was under the impression once I release the album, I'm going to be a star. And that wasn't it.
Can't Afford a Dollar was a rough one, right?
It wasn't until Resurrection.
The second album.
The second album was like, Can't Afford a Dollar came out and people didn't know who I was and they wasn't vibing what I was doing overall. You know, some cats did, but not overall. And Resurrection was that album where I was, like, I was starting to listen to John Coltrane and read the Quran and open my mind up to new things. So I was, like, growing as an artist and growing as a man, too. And that's when I wrote I Used to Love Her and Resurrection and that album. And I remember, like, my stamp of approval was when I saw Nas out here and he was like, keep doing what you're doing. I remember them words, like, keep doing what you're doing. I was like, damn, Nas, you know, Nas recognized me. And from there, you know, me and him and Fat Joe, like, Fat Joe was had us in a video. So when I get back to the crib,
Cassie, you know, today Fat Joe's birthday, Bob.
Oh, happy born day to our brother Joe. Like, you know, that brother kind of saved my life.
Fat Joe
saved my life.
What do you mean?
Brother.
How so?
So after the beef with Ice Cube and mm-hmm. and Mac 10, the beef we had,
right.
We got settled by Minister Farrakhan, right?
Whole meeting. Go look it up. It's out there. Matter of fact, I tell Cube all the time, Common got you. That bitching you was tough.
Yeah, Cube my guy, but you know.
Y'all cleaned up, but that was, listen.
I had to go for mine.
All right, let's focus.
Yo, that bitching you. Yo, y'all never heard Common going at Cube bitching you. Listen.
Yo, hey.
He don't even like to talk about it. It's uncomfortable.
So listen. We doing this commercial, a Sprite commercial. It's like a Voltron commercial where they, you know, they take an artist from each region. Like Fat Joe was representing the East, Goody Mob was representing the South, I was representing the Midwest, and Mac 10 and was representing the West Coast. Now beef been squashed. Everything is good. Like, you know, I'm about to make at this point the most money I ever made in it. So I'm out there by myself in L.A. one of my homies' guys is out there staying at the same hotel, so I tell him to come to the commercial. You know, he cool. He's one of my guys. He good. So we go to the commercial, and he started, like, basically staring down Mac 10, you know, like, just giving the grilling him. And then, you know, he said, Mac 10 and him was like, man, what you looking at, homie? And he was like, man, I'm from Chicago. We look niggas in the eye. And then, man, from that point, I know Mac 10, homie, went and got they thing, got that thing, and was like, yo. So I told my homie, Fat Joe came to me and was like, yo, Ross, you know, because my guy did a little more, too, after that, like, just, you know, just agitating the situation. So I'm like, Fat Joe said, Ross, man, yo, your man got to go. He gotta leave. He can't stay. Like, I'm telling you right now.
This money being made, this corporate, this is.
Yeah, and these cats is about to get real out here.
And y'all in L.A.
You in L.A. I'm by my, it's two of us. And he like, yo, you got to go. Because I'm letting you know, you just looked me in my, it was like some real gangster. Fat Joe, like, oh, he got to go. Like, you know, some mob, he got to go. So then he left, but my man came back and busted some windows.
Ah, this dude is wildin'.
So then I'm like, oh, bro, like, why you do that? So then they like, Ross, we gonna have to get your man. We gonna have to get your man. And you know, they roughed him up a little, but it wasn't nothing. And I mean, it wasn't nothing too bad. Everybody's security got me. And Joe later pulled me to the side. And then later when I talked to him in the interview, he's like, Ross, you know they was ready to get you. They was ready to get you for real. Like, I was like, man. And he said, I had to talk to them. I had to sit down and say, because them was his guys. He was cool with Mac 10. He's like, man, y'all ain't touching him. You know, blah, blah, blah. Like, so he essentially, because I was in L.A.
Yeah, he was out there dolo.
Dolo, bro.
Could have went down.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yo, happy birthday to Fat Joe.
Yeah, happy birthday.
He helps out a lot of people.
Man, he's a great, man, he's one of the best people I known in this game, man. It's just a good person.
When Kanye produced, it was Go.
Yeah, Go, yeah.
Right, that yeah. album. Yeah. That was the first time you and Kanye had worked together as him overseeing an entire project.
Yes, yep, you absolutely. It was, Kanye had the No ID days, Kanye, like in early 96, 95, Kanye was like always at No ID's basement, in his basement. So I met Kanye, and Kanye was, like, really growing as a producer, but his beats wasn't all the way there yet, and I had No ID. So he would always push beats to me. He would come rhyme in my basement, be freestyling, you know, but I never, like, collaborate. We never did. He never produced anything. He came out here and made something for himself.
Yeah.
And, like, in, like, early 2003, we ran into each other at the airport. He was like, Ross, you got to get on my album. And then I was like, cool. So then I was working on Get 'Em High, and he was like, yo. He started, I said, man, when you going to make me? Oh, actually, I was like, when you going to make me some beats, man? And then he invited me to the studio. He was working on some beats for somebody else. And I went to the studio, and I could tell he kind of cooked it up for me, but it was that person's session. As soon as I got in there, he played me this beat. And it was the beat that I ended up using for the song, The Food. I walked in the crib, got two kids. So he was like, you want this? And he's like, all right, take it. I left out of the studio. He put it on CD. This one we had a CD. Put it on CD. I left out of the studio. That was the beginning of us creating. He was like, man, we got to do more stuff. And I was like, yes. And I said, man, I'll be on your label. And we just go. And then we started. I would go buy records. He'd buy records. We'd sit down. I would put stacks of records in front of him, like, that I listened to, you know, that, and I would mark. No, he would mark the ones that he liked. I would only put the ones that I thought was good in front of him, and he would listen to them down, mark the songs he liked, and then go back to those and just start cooking up. I remember when he cooked up The Corners, it was one of those things where he was, man, he had kicked it out all night. He was hanging out all night, like, and he was tired. And I was like, damn, he ain't gonna do nothing today. Like, I could just feel like he might not do nothing. He said, Ross, let me get just like 2 hours. So he said, let me take a nap. He took a nap, man. He got up. The first record he picked up was the drums for The Corner. And then he found the sample. And man, he hooked that beat up like so quick. And I was like, this dude is incredible. And then he started coming with the hook. And while he was doing the hook, he was like, yo, I could see. Nah, this is after I wrote the rap. He was like, I could see us in Chicago, like doing it, like it's a cold day, blah, blah, blah. And that was his boss for the video. And we went and did
Last Poets around the trash can.
He came with the idea to get the Last Poets. That joint was, he was like, yo, you should get them, what's them cats, the Last Poets. I said, yeah, let's get, because I love the Last Poets. I used to read the Last Poets records, listen to their records, but I would read their records to get inspired to write. So when he was like, get the Last Poets, I was like, that's super dope. We got them. I was like, man, I remember one day we was performing the corner on Jay Leno, and I was like, man, the Last Poets is on freaking Jay Leno, man. It was like incredible for me to see, man, because them dudes is some of the most revolutionary.
Absolutely.
Right.
And they on late night TV talking that realness. Yeah.
So do you remember at that time Kanye produces, like Kanye's producing the entire Common album?
Chef G is home, baby. Sleepy Hollow, Connie Diamond, 310 Baby, celebrity host, Ice Spice and A Boogie. Big Daddy Kane will be celebrating the life of the finisher, Mr. C.
Mr. C, step swimming.
Jadakiss, EPMD, Eric B and Rakim, Method Man and Redman, Lord Tariq and Peter Guns. Yours truly, the curator, the lit digital DJ, Funk Flex on the set. Hosted by Nessa, Ebro, Peter Rosenberg, and Laura Stiles. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Oh, you thought we wasn't going to get it right?
He's on fire!
You were seen as like an underground MC. Kanye was seen as like the mainstream artist at that time.
Yeah.
Do you remember like kind of getting a little backlash from people?
I mean,
do you remember that a little bit at that time? Because I remember reading articles and it was like, and I was like, this happens in hip hop, happens in all genres all the time, where the underground subculture becomes mainstream, and then the people who love that purist thing is like, nah, this ain't it no more. I seen it happen to the Fugees. Yeah, remember that? Yeah, remember when the Fugees blew up?
Yes.
And the whole world was like, ah, the Fugees ain't popping. Yeah. I was like, why? Yeah, they doing the same shit they've been doing.
And it was they knew stuff was even better.
And everybody mad.
Yeah, but honestly, I don't remember the backlash as much, because it was like, what I felt with Kanye was that he was able to take the purity of hip hop and make it like palatable for the masses. Mm-hmm. Like, he know how to make soulful joints, and he's like, he knows Gangsta, he knows Tribe, he knows, like, and he'll reference he was referencing stuff from albums I did. I'm like, damn, yeah, you remember that? And he's a student of hip hop, but he also is a student of music, and his ear and his genius is like that great, where he writes songs that can relate to so many people. Mm-hmm. You know? And I was really like, damn, this is what I was feeling was like, damn, this is what it's like for me to just be able to be me and be a hip hop dude and have songs that are like,
it's like your Quincy Jones.
He was the Quincy Jones for me. So I appreciated that, but I do understand what you're saying about how sometimes in hip hop that, you know, like once you go and do something that does become more successful or commercial, the underground is like, why you left?
Yeah.
And it's like, nah, man, it's just the music just elevated to that point, right? And it reached those people. Cause I remember, man, like one of the first times for me ever feeling like, damn, this music is going somewhere else, is when I did The Light and Little Black Girls was singing my song. Like, I remember performing at like one of like a Summer Jam type event, and Little Black Girls was coming up singing. I never had that in my life. Like, and I was like, man, this is amazing to see, like, young girls that don't really know who Common is singing this song. And I'm always like, I'm the type of artist that's like, I'm gonna stick to what I believe is dope and fresh. I'm not gonna chase the streams, the million sales, but I want the music to get to the masses like that. And honestly, being able to work with her has been like, her songwriting, like, PJ comes from, when we talk about Kanye, PJ comes from a place where her music and her songwriting can appeal to like all types of people. Like it's lately, my mother was listening to my music and was like, damn, you getting better. Your songs is better. She said that to me. And I was thinking like, well, some of that has got to be just in the song making.
Right.
You know, like just actually making a song. So
not just the rap part.
Yeah, not
and
just
a lot
the
of people, rap. A lot of people screwed up. I'm sure you deal with that a lot, PJ, as a songwriter, where it's like people think the lyrics are just the song. And it's like, nah, it's the lyrics, the melody, the music, the arrangement.
Yeah, and then what you talking about too, because certain things resonate. Like, even just having a good time, even if it's not being sung, like songs that are about having a good time just tend to go like this, you know what I'm saying? And love songs always feel good, you know, because everybody wants to sing a love song, mm-hmm. even, you know, even the toughest.
You be singing a love song, Ebro?
I'm an R&B head, you know that. Yeah, come on, man, that. I ride the slow jam.
You ride the great joy, great music. You a music head, point blank.
Yeah, that's I'm all of my love for music comes through melody, church.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was my initial, Pentecostal church was my initial entree into like music. And then, you know, obviously cousins listening to Off the Wall. And then, you know, growing up around people playing the pianos and being in studio since I was really mad young and being in radio mad young, just watching how and what sticks to people and why. And what is it, just like you talked about, love and having a good time and these kind of universal concepts that, you know, a lot of people can gravitate to and gather around, right? Yeah. I wanna get in some music while we got Common here. Let's play that Imagine joint with y'all two together off of The Beautiful Revolution Part 2. And then I want to play a classic.
Okay.
There was this thing going around on Twitter the other day. It was like, what hip-hop record, what song was necessary to be made in hip-hop? Like, what is that, like, essential? I used to love them.
You put that? Thank you, brother. I appreciate that.
That's one of them songs that kind of, like, contextualizes... I think and the reason it's so popular and universal, talking about things that are universal, is for a hip-hop fan, you know, if you love the music no matter where it came from and what happened to this music as it evolved and changed and became either things you love more or things you didn't like, right? Because sometimes hip-hop, and you talk about it in the song, and I think that still happens today where there's people who hip-hop evolves into something that they don't particularly love, and then they want to say it's not hip hop.
I know, yeah.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Because you don't like it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's like, I mean, we don't have the like ownership of hip hop. Like, one person doesn't have the ownership of
or one
of
sound hip-hop. Or one region or one,
man, that's and I used to love it. One of the things that I was really getting across was that, man, this is, I grew up listening to East Coast and West Coast. I love Rakim, I love Ice Cube, I love Too Short. I love Souls of Mischief. I love KRS and Tribe. So it's like, man, this is all hip-hop to me. And even some of the stuff I don't love is still hip-hop.
That's
if they're coming from that place. And that's really some of what I was getting across. And I was also saying what you said earlier, just like, man, this music got to stay pure. This culture got to stay pure. And, like, don't lose the essence of what it is. You know, her, I used to love her, H-E-R. I made a period behind those letters because her stamp stood for and stands for hip-hop in its essence and real. And I was like, man, I don't want hip-hop to lose its essence, man. I just love this too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Common's here. Common's hanging out with us today. You recently collaborated or, I don't know, did you and Damian Marley collaborate or did he just take the song and jump on it?
No, we collaborated. It was a conversation. I didn't get to go to the studio with him, which, you know, obviously nowadays you don't always get that anyway, but I still love that process. But we talked and he was, you know, between our label, they were like, yo, man, because he's on the same label that I'm on, Loma Vista, and he was like, man, he gonna do this song. He gonna do it. And I was like, good. Man, I heard it. Me and PJ heard it in the studio. We was like,
it was all right.
We was like, she was like, play that again. Like, yo, this joint is.
That's you on the hook?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that joint crazy.
Yeah.
Let's play that. Common's hanging out. We might as well play the light too.
Yeah, let's do that, man. Let's
classic that. Common. What's the record you and Badu did together?
Love of My Life.
Yeah. Which was another record specifically about hip hop.
Yeah, yeah. That was like, that was inspired. Love of My Life was inspired by I Used to Love Her, which really actually we wrote that song for this movie called Brown Sugar.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And Brown Sugar was actually inspired by I Used to Love Her because, like, the whole movie was about that.
High 97's in Brown Sugar.
Exactly. It is.
Yo, you want to know something funny?
What?
So in the movie, I'm going to let you get back to it. I mean, in the movie, the program director, High 97, is a black woman. At that time, the program director of Hot 97 was a white woman. Yo, she was so tight that they didn't put her.
She was
I was like, listen, man, it's black music.
This is what it is. They had to cast a black woman in that. We'd have been like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
But no, that's dope that they did that. And Brown Sugar, the writer of that, Michael Elliott, he had come to me to do some film writing stuff. And I was like really intimidated by that because I had never written a script or anything like that. So I never pursued it. I kind of like slacked on it. And he ended up going and writing Brown Sugar. He was writing a musical when he wanted me to write the part of the script. But he ended up writing Brown Sugar. And I was like, man, this is basically I Used to Love Her because it was about they love and they love for hip hop. And they, you know, they in the middle of the movie, they kind of spit in the lyrics to I Used to Love Her.
Right.
So they had Erica and I screen the movie. And that's when we came up with Love of My Life. And she was like, yeah, man, you got to be on this. This movie is about your song pretty much. I was grateful. That was my first Grammy.
I didn't know y'all had got a Grammy.
Yeah.
How many Grammys you got?
Three. And Robert Glasper always let me know he got more than me. you know that.
Yo, Robert, man, my daughter gonna deal with you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know him and Issa got a rap battle that's been going on for like 3-4 years.
Oh, man, I know she getting him because this dude is
barring him up. He don't want that smoke. And then he send little voice notes, like trying to respond.
Oh, my.
She be like, Dad, I'm not in the mood.
Exactly.
He's not on my level.
He not, bro. He be thinking he is.
Not on my level.
Yeah.
By the way, Robert Glasper just be playing. He's an amazing jazz pianist, if y'all don't. And producer and all of that. So go check him out. He's actually at the Blue Note
this month.
You popping out at the Blue Note?
Yes, sir. We, man.
That show's amazing.
Those shows at the Blue Note, like, you never know who's going
to
come.
Yo, I went to one on just me. I took Issa, and guess who walked out?
Who?
Dave.
Yasiin Bey.
I was at mine, too. He was
Yasiin
at mine,
Bey
too.
Walked out. I was, and me and Issa's like, who's this?
Yeah. yo. Them shows, man, you never know. Like, first of all, Yasiin will be there, Black Thought will come there, Q-Tip will come there, the musicians that he had. Robert is one of the greatest musicians ever. Yeah. But that Blue Note, Dave Chappelle special. Be just popping up, hosting
Chris
sometime. Chris Rock was there. Yeah, we went there. He played there a couple of months ago. We just went. But now he's about to do that, you know, his residency in October. I'm definitely going to be there.
I'm in there.
It's special.
Yeah.
They need to get this Delta.
I loved it.
They need to get this Delta variant together so we can really have a good time.
Yeah, I know.
It's close proximity in that Blue Note.
I know.
It's tight in there.
It's tight.
I think they're going to try to spread it out. Initially, they was trying to put some barriers. But then, you know, the time he had these shows, everything was a little easier. What the Delta variant wasn't what it is. So, yo, I think we'll be all right, man.
All right. Comment. Let's play that. Let's play that classic with Badu. Common, man. It's great to see you, man.
Yeah, man. It's great
and
to
PJ,
be here,
great
man.
To meet
thank
you.
It's dope to meet you.
Yo, I want to play that Go, and I want to play that Corner, too.
Man, thank you, man. Thank y'all, man. Come on.
We got some hits, man. We got to remind people. People forget.
Yeah, man.
People do forget. They start thinking you just actor.
Yeah.
Or you just do the movie songs with you and John Legend every couple of years, roll out and get a some sort of award for writing some amazing movie songs or something. Or just a Microsoft commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, Common just do commercials
and
movies.
Exactly, man. Let them know about the music. But no, thanks, man. I'm glad to see y'all, too, man. It's just great to be here.
For sure, man. It's love. Nice, always. And pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Y'all go get that. What is it? A Beautiful Revolution Part 2.
Yeah, September 10th.
Go pick it up.
Ebro in the Morning with Laura Stiles and Rosenberg.
Chef G is home, baby. Sleepy Hollow, Connie Diamond, 310 Baby, celebrity host, Ice Spice and A Boogie. Big Daddy Kane will be celebrating the life of the finisher, Mr. C.
Mr. C, step swimming.
Jadakiss, EPMD, Eric B and Rakim, Method Man and Redman, Lord Tariq and Peter Guns.
Yours truly, the curator, the lit digital DJ, Funk Flex on the set. Hosted by Nessa, Ebro, Peter Rosenberg, and Laura Stiles.
30th anniversary of Summer Jam. 30% off right now. This offer ends at midnight on Sunday. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Oh, you thought we wasn't going to get it right?
He's on fire.